First, I'd like to just thank Govinda for chanting for me, because I have a really overused voice. So I don't think I could have managed the singing, the chanting, everything. So I asked him to help me. Thank you. So today, I believe, is the first class from Prabhupada's devotees on for the special festival next weekend, which theme is Prabhupada's journey on the Jaladuta. Now, I'm sure everyone's going to be reading from the Jaladuta book, so I won't be doing that. But what I want to do is look at the backstory, if you like. Who is Prabhupada? How he ended up on the Jaladuta? And being an ex-teacher, I've even got my lesson outcomes, my learning aims. And what I hope that you'll learn today is, I'd like you to have a better understanding of Srila Prabhupada, who Srila Prabhupada is. I was going to share my personal stories because, well, no one else can tell you those, although I have seen stuff on the internet where people have tried. And also, as kind of a plenary for you to go away with and to think about, is to consider the qualities of Srila Prabhupada. Maybe think about the stories that go with these qualities. Maybe we're able to touch on that. I'm not sure about time. So I chose this verse in the Bhagavatam for a specific reason in the purport. So this is Prithu, is the king who's talking. And he said, the king said, O Brahmana, O powerful one, formerly Lord Vishnu showed me his causeless mercy, indicating that you would come to my house and to confirm that blessings you have all come. So here's a purport by Srila Prabhupada. Might be a little different on your phones because I've got the old books. When Lord Vishnu appeared to the great arena of sacrifice at the time when King Prithu was performing a great sacrifice, Ashvamedha, he predicted that the Kumaras would very soon come and advise the king. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj remembered the causeless mercy of the Lord and thus welcomed the arrival of the Kumaras, that's the four Kumaras, who were fulfilling the Lord's prediction. In other words, when the Lord makes a prediction, he fulfills that prediction through some of his devotees. I'll just say that again. When the Lord makes a prediction, he fulfills that prediction through some of his devotees. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that both his glorious names and the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra would be broadcast in all the towns and villages of the world. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada desire to fulfill this great prediction, and we are following in their footsteps. Regarding his devotees, Lord Krishna told Arjuna, O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. Bhagavad Gita 9:31. The point is that the Lord himself could declare such things, but it was his desire to make the declaration through Arjuna and thus doubly assure that his promise would never be broken. The Lord himself promises, and his confidential devotees execute the promise. The Lord makes so many promises for the benefit of suffering humanity. Although the Lord is very compassionate upon suffering humanity, human beings are generally not very anxious to serve him. The relationship is something like that between the father and the son. The father is always anxious for the welfare of the son, even though the son forgets or neglects the father. The word anukampina is significant. The Lord is so compassionate upon the living entities that he comes himself into this world in order to benefit fallen souls. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practices, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Bhagavad Gita 4:7. This is out of compassion that the Lord appears in his different forms. Lord Sri Krishna appeared on the planet out of compassion for fallen souls. Lord Buddha appeared out of compassion for the poor animals who were being killed by the demons. Lord Nisringadev appeared out of compassion for Prahlad Maharaj. The conclusion is that the Lord is so compassionate upon the fallen souls within this material world that he comes himself. Here's the interesting bit. Or sends his devotees and his servants to fulfill his desire to have all the fallen souls come back home, back to Godhead. Thus, Lord Sri Krishna instructed Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna for the benefit of the entire human society. Intelligent men should therefore seriously consider this Krishna conscious movement and fully utilize the instructions of Bhagavad Gita as preached without adulteration by his pure devotees. So the point of this, why I chose this purport is that Krishna sends, he either comes himself, which we've seen as Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, or he sends his devotees and his servants to fulfill his desire. So we conclude here, well, this is my conclusion. I presume most of you will agree, if not all of you, that Prabhupada was actually sent by Krishna to do this mission. It wasn't some accident that he was sent by Krishna to start this Hare Krishna movement. And of course, it's in our hands now to carry it on and fulfill all the things that Prabhupada wanted. There's also more evidence, if you like, of Srila Prabhupada's mission. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, I don't have the Sanskrit in this one, in this version, but it's Lord Chaitanya says, this Lord Chaitanya himself said, I'll probably blow this Bengali, but here goes. Prithvi payanta yata achi desi grama sarvatra sabkara habeki mora nama. In every town and village of the world, the chanting of my name will be heard. Now, of course, Lord Chaitanya didn't leave the shores of India, but who got on the Jaladuta, sailed 12,000 miles in that terrible conditions. I don't know if you've ever been in a boat when the weather's been bad. I have. It's absolutely awful. 12,000 miles at age, well, he passed, Srila Prabhupada was 70 on the Jaladuta. So he came to fulfill this prediction of Lord Chaitanya. There's another one in the Chaitanya Mangala, Song 12, text 564, 565, Lord Chaitanya clearly states that he will be sending his leading preachers abroad, not within India, but abroad, outside of India. I'll have another go at the, I think it's Bengali. Ebi nama sankitana tikshna kajalana antara asura jivera pelibra katia Yadi papi chadi dharma dura deshi yaya mora sena pati bhakta yabi ta hayaya. And the translation is, taking the sharp sword of the congregational chanting of the holy name, I will root out and destroy the demoniac mentality in the hearts of the conditioned souls. In some people, escape and giving up religious principles, if some people escape and giving up religious principles go to far-off countries, that's us lot, by the way, in the far-off countries, then my commander-in-chief will appear to chase them and distribute Krishna consciousness. So who's this commander-in-chief? who's gone to the foreign countries to disrupt Krishna consciousness. Any guesses? Any ideas? Are we all agreed on that? Great. Great. So Srila Prabhupada is the Senapati Bhakta who Lord Chaitanya has said will go to far-off countries. The commander-in-chief, he'll chase them to give them Krishna consciousness. And I think that's pretty much what Srila Prabhupada did. He had to chase us for us to become Krishna conscious. Okay, now I have another prediction here. It's on my phone. This is a prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur from his Sanjani Toshini, which was written in 1885. So that was the year before Srila Prabhupada appeared. Let's hope my phone is going to do this. So this is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Lord Chaitanya did not advent himself to literally only a few men in India. Rather, his main objective was to emancipate all living entities of all countries throughout the entire universe and preach the eternal religion. There is no doubt that this unquestionable order will come to pass. So don't forget, this is written before Prabhupada, the year before Prabhupada's death. Very soon, the unparalleled path of Hari Nam Sankirtan will be propagated all over the world. Oh, for that day when the fortunate English, French, Russian, German, and American people will take up banners, madungas, and cartels and raise kirtan throughout their streets and towns. When will that day come? That day will witness the holy transcendental ecstasy of the Vaishnav Dharma to be the only Dharma, and all the sects and religions will flow like rivers into the ocean of Vaishnava Dharma. When will that day come? Well, I don't know whether... I personally have seen days when we've gone to villages that have never heard the Sankirtan movement before. When I did Padyatra, I'm thinking when I first did in 1990 with my husband Parashuram, and, well, we weren't married then, but he is now my husband, kind of. In 1990 in Ireland, now, Ireland's quite different to England. I'm on about the south of Ireland. And we went on Padyatra from Belfast to, I don't know what the route was. But we'd go into these villages, and really all there was, if you'd blink, you'd miss it. And basically there was a couple of pubs, and that was it. The houses were all out of the village in the farms. And we'd go, and we'd find a park, and we'd sit and chant, just like Srila Prabhupada did in Tompkins Square Park. And I know, and the people, they were kind of hiding and looking, and it was a very strange sight for them. But there you go. We took Hari Nam to places that had never been taken before. And Parashuram has some quote. I didn't get it off him, unfortunately, because he's always too busy. And it says that when you go into a new village, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur is personally with you. Like I say, I don't have the quote, but that's what I've been told. So I'm sure there's still villages, even in England, although it's pretty much well done in England. We've been very successful with our Hari Nams and our Padyatras and things, that this must be some place somewhere where you can still go and chant the holy name. So if anyone feels like it, go for it. Okay, so what else did I want to point out? Oh yeah, it was 100 years ago this year in 1822, 100 years exactly, Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And at that very first meeting, Bhaktisiddhanta actually asked Srila Prabhupada to preach in English. And apparently, one of his godbrothers, oh no, this is a room conversation. In 1935, Bhaktisiddhanta told Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother and others, that he, meaning Srila Prabhupada, our Srila Prabhupada, will do the needful when the time comes. Nobody is required to help him. And Prabhupada told us that in a room conversation on June the 17th, 1977 in Vrindavan. So not that long before his physical presence was lost. Also, I read that one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Narayananda Das Babaji, recalled a meeting with Bhaktisiddhanta where he predicted, whilst looking out at Srila Prabhupada and making eye contact with Prabhupada, that however long in the future it may be, one of my disciples will cross the ocean. That devotee will bring back the whole world. And in one sense, look how many temples we've got, how many countries there are temples in, how many countries where there might not be temples, but Padyatra went there. So in that sense, Srila Prabhupada did bring back the whole world. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta did send other people before Srila Prabhupada to the West, Bon Maharaj. I can't remember who went with Bon Maharaj. And they did something. There was one Western devotee was initiated. They met Hitler. I don't know how successful we can count that. And I remember in Bombay, we used to, there was this story. I don't have like a scriptural reference, but there was a story that they brought back. You know, one of those, I don't know, we have them in England now, but I spent some of my childhood in Germany. And they had these swing chairs that at that time we didn't have in England. You know the ones in the garden and they swing? They're very common. Well, they were in my childhood in Germany. And they brought Bhaktisiddhanta back one of these swing chairs, but he wasn't very impressed. He wanted devotees. And Bhaktisiddhanta said one very interesting thing that I can't remember it verbatim, but I'll give you a rough idea. He said that when we pull the cart of Jagannath in the streets of Eastbourne, because this preaching that the Gaudiya Mutt did was in Eastbourne, when we pull the cart of Jagannath in Eastbourne, Alanath, Gaudianath, and Gopinath will manifest. So we actually did this some years back. We had a Rathiatra in Eastbourne. And honest to God, I'm like this, looking at the sky, expecting to see these deities. But I don't have that purity to see them, but I'm sure they were there. It was quite an amazing experience. We were all kind of like, wow, what's going to happen? Something really special is going to happen. Anyway. And the other thing that, it's a slightly different kind of prediction because obviously these predictions are from the scriptures. Oh, I have one from Lord Nityananda, actually. I almost forgot this. Look at Lord Nityananda himself. Where are we? Will I find the right bit? I think it's this one. This is Lord Nityananda. This is from Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita because Prabhupada didn't actually translate this Chaitanya Bhagavat. Upon seeing the chanting and dancing of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda predicted that later there would be dancing and chanting in every village. That's from Majjalila chapter 7, text 82. And the purport, the prediction of Sri Nityananda Prabhu is applicable not only in India, but also all over the world. That is now happening by his grace, meaning Lord Nityananda's grace. The members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are now traveling from one village to another in the Western countries and are even carrying the deity with them. These devotees distribute various literatures all over the world. We hope that these devotees who are preaching the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will very seriously follow strictly in his footsteps. If they follow the rules and regulations and chant 16 rounds daily, their endeavor to preach the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will certainly be successful. So actually, I mean, we really have a legacy to fulfill. It's not something easy in one sense to fill all these prophecies from Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and even Advaita Acharya here. I'm just looking at the time. He also had a dream. He said, "My dear devotee brothers, I had a dream last night, which I wish to reveal to all of you. I took rest feeling very sad and dejected. I was fasting because I could not understand a text in the Bhagavad Gita. Sometime during the night in my dream, a person came to me and said, 'Wake up, Acharya, take your food immediately. I will reveal to you the real meaning of the Bhagavad Gita text. However, first you must rise and eat and then worship me. Discard the melancholy in your heart, for your austerities and vows have finally reaped a full harvest. All your fasting, your worship, and your endless entreaties to the Lord, crying, Krishna, Krishna, and the vow you made with lifted hands for the advent of the Lord will come to fruition. The chanting of Lord Krishna's holy name will constantly reverberate in every country, in every town, and in every village. By your mercy, everyone will be able to experience here in Navadvip, in Srivasi's house, devotional ecstasy that is rarely achieved even by Lord Brahma. Now I will take your leave, but first you must eat. I will appear to you again in the future. When I opened my eyes, I saw Lord Vishvambara. But within minutes, he vanished from my sight.'" So there again, we have Lord Chaitanya talking to, well, he's in a dream of Advaita Acharya's, again predicting this holy name in every village. And we are the lucky ones because we are sitting here in Prabhupada's temples because Prabhupada went on the Jaladuta and brought Krishna consciousness out of India. And I don't know about anyone else, but it's actually very humbling to think that we are so fortunate as to have come in contact with Srila Prabhupada and have this opportunity to make the right decisions, to dedicate our life to Krishna, and thus go back home, back to Godhead. The other thing that predicted Srila Prabhupada was actually the astrologer at his birth, and he predicted that Srila Prabhupada, on his 70th year, would cross the ocean and open 108 temples. So hence Srila Prabhupada entered the Jaladuta Friday the 13th of August, 1965 at 9 a.m. I got that out of the book, so it's accurate. So I hope you're all feeling lucky. Are you all feeling lucky? Because we should be. We should be feeling really lucky that we have this opportunity because Krishna sent Srila Prabhupada to save us. Okay, now, 1 minute, just get rid of this phone. I hope it doesn't go off. God, just bring it on silent, that would be awful, wouldn't it? So, any questions at this point before I go on to the next part? Everyone's in agreement with me. Great, love it. Okay. So I thought I'd share with you my own experiences with Srila Prabhupada, because obviously those are unique to me and no one else can tell you, although people have tried. Honestly, although I met the devotees in 1969, I was still working and I didn't meet Prabhupada until Rathiatra 1973. Now, Rathiatra 1973, in London, obviously, I'm English, it was a very special occurrence because Mahavishnu Maharaj, you must know him, the one with the funny hat, You know, great devotee, incredible devotee. He'd inherited a sizable amount of money from an aunt. He comes from quite a middle-class family, you know, maybe upper class, I don't know the difference. And he'd inherited a really, I can't remember the amount, but it's probably around 90 or 100,000 in today's money, but I can't remember fully. I might be getting muddled. So he was put in charge of organizing the Rath Yatra. So it was a really well-presented Rath Yatra. They put up awnings. You were there, weren't you, Jagadatri? They put up awnings in... what's the name of that square? Trafalgar Square. And they had a magazine that was printed specifically for the Rath Yatra. So I was distributing these magazines in the crowd. You know, we always have to sell our books. It's what we do. And suddenly, I mean, without any warning, like all the hairs on my body, like they all stood on end. And I looked around, and right behind me, like a meter, like behind this chair, that distance about here, Prabhupada was dancing. Arms raised, Swami step, you know the Swami step, one step over the other. None of this other dancing we do. Swami step, like this. And it was just actually, it wasn't that I saw him, it was I felt Prabhupada, you know, those hairs were all on end, and I looked around and Prabhupada's there and dancing, and it was quite an unrepeatable experience. It was just so unique to be that close to a pure devotee. We've just seen how Krishna himself has sent him. It was a really powerful experience. So that was my first physical experience with Srila Prabhupada. Later I went to India, and that was where the first time Srila Prabhupada spoke to me. And the ladies, we used to clean Prabhupada's rooms in Bombay. He was living on the third English, the English counting, not the American counting, the third floor. It had been built on the roof of a two-story building. And we used to clean his rooms. And what happened was, I missed time getting out of the building before Srila Prabhupada came up the stairs. So I met him on the stairs. And India's a very friendly country. It's not like England. Very friendly people. And the door to their lady's kitchen was open, so I jumped in her kitchen and paid my obeisances. I mean, you'd never dream of jumping in someone's English kitchen, complete strangers, would you? But you can do it in India. No one minds. Amazing place, India. So I jumped into this lady's kitchen and paid my obeisances. So when I got up, Prabhupada was standing in front of me looking down at me. And he said to me, "So, you are chanting Hare Krishna." Now, although in one sense that's a statement, that's how Prabhupada asked questions, was in statements. I don't know if you've noticed that. So I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "Jai," which of course means victory. I was having some victory over the material nature. But when you look back on your life, which you do when you reach my age, and you think about the esoteric, the real meaning, whichever way you want to put it, I can understand that what Srila Prabhupada wanted was just for us to chant Hare Krishna. That was our victory if we were chanting Hare Krishna. So don't neglect your rounds, folks. That's our business, is to chant Hare Krishna. He also sent me some messages. You have this idea when you're young that I thought Prabhupada could walk into his rooms in Bombay and the light would be on and everything would be ready for him. So I left the light on. So don't forget, it was only a matter of seconds, but I left the room and Prabhupada came in. So I left the light on and Prabhupada sent the message, "Don't waste electricity." It was only a few seconds. But of course, electricity costs money. And as we're learning in this country, it's becoming rare and more expensive. So learn from Prabhupada's message to me, don't waste electricity. Sorry about these glasses. Something really wonderful happened in Bombay, actually. I used to run a school for street children. And I'm talking really street children, you know. There was more holes in the clothes than there were clothes. They were very, very poor in India in those days. And they didn't live in houses. They lived in, you know, bits of cardboard and corrugated steel on the side of walls. You know, around the edge of, like, Hare Krishna Land in Bombay had a boundary wall. So they'd have bits of things coming off this boundary wall, and that's where they lived, extremely poor people. So we started a school, and they were a real ragtag lot, you can't imagine. Wonderful kids, though. So we used to have these really good kirtans. And one time, Prabhupada heard the kirtans. So he invited the children to meet him, to come up and meet him in his room. Now, this is Srila Prabhupada, head of International Society, author of I don't know how many books, and sitting in his room are all the rich people of Bombay. But Prabhupada has time for the little person, the little beggar kids from the streets of Bombay. Srila Prabhupada has time for them. So we went up to Srila Prabhupada's room, and we'd all drawn pictures of Krishna. And Prabhupada, he looked at the pictures and, you know, to the kids. I mean, it was really magical because it makes you realize, like I said, when you look back on your life and you think about everything that's happened, Prabhupada wasn't seeing the bank accounts or whatever. He was seeing the soul with everyone's heart. And I think that's a really, really wonderful way to look at people. I think we'd avoid a hell of a lot of problems if we remembered the soul in everyone's heart. So, oh yeah. Also in Bombay, I got my Brahmin initiation. Now remember, I was a young devotee. What did I know? I was only in my early 20s somewhere. And so we went out. Someone helped me. Because I was, you know, I was an English girl living in Bombay. Although in those days in India, white ladies were treated with so much respect because the Raj had only left 20 years earlier. So I went to collect this Guru Dakshin. And I bought all kinds of stuff. You know, I was more in an English kind of birthday mood than just giving the money to Srila Prabhupada. So I bought a bunch of gifts. And I wrapped them in this tissue paper. And I took them to Srila Prabhupada and I put them all on his desk. And there was a daub. You know, Prabhupada liked drinking daub. So I'm balancing this daub and I put it on. I said, it wasn't opened. I said, I hear you like daub, Srila Prabhupada. I bought you a daub. And I took him a lotus garland and some sandalwood oil and a silver lotus bowl with chandan in to put on his forehead. And there were a few other things that were escaping me. And Prabhupada looked at them and he said, so many things. And he was like opening them. And I actually felt like Prabhupada was the child and I was the mother or the grandmother or whatever, the mother. It was a really far out feeling. Prabhupada just looked like this little boy opening his presents. And then it struck me again years later when I looked back on my life and I realized that I heard Prabhupada give this lecture. It was also in Bombay. And he said, it's not the verbatim, but more. He said that the most important thing for brahmacharis is to see all women as their mothers. That's the secret of being a good brahmachari. You don't see them as prospective partners or whatever. And then I realized that that was what was happening. Srila Prabhupada was seeing me in a very motherly way. And consequently, I was seeing him as like this little boy opening his presents. Again, it was a really, you know, unrepeatable experience. And then though, when it came to learning the Gayatri, the mood was, changed. He was back to being the guru. The little boy was gone. The mother was gone. I was a little girl and he was the father, grandfather aged. And he was teaching me the Gayatri mantra. He's very strict about it, you know, because my Sanskrit is far from perfect. But I thought I'd share that with you. Oh, another funny thing happened. I was with Sava Mongol, those of you know who Sava Mongol. And we in Bombay, I don't know whether any of you know what the old Bombay temple was like, but there was this old corrugated tin roof. You know corrugated tin roofs, you know? Think of those old bomb shelters in England, those kind of roofs, you know? And there was a floor with some tiles on, and there were four or maybe six, eight of these things holding the roof up. And in the rainy season, we'd pull down some shutters. There were no walls. There was a wall where the deities were, Radharasa Bihari, and nice, beautiful wooden doors. And at the back of that, there was a devotee kitchen and a deity kitchen. The deity kitchen was pretty much with the corrugated iron, whatever it is, roof. But the devotee kitchen was, the walls came up to here, then there was a gap, and then there was a straw roof. And how it never caught fire is a miracle, because, you know, you've got these blazing fires and a straw roof and rats running around sometimes, you know, when we weren't in there. So somehow in that kitchen, oh, in the devotee kitchen, don't think you've got gas burners. No, you've got a couple of those kerosene, you know, the ones you pump. You've probably never seen them. If you've ever been camping, you might have seen one. But it's a kerosene cooker. You know, you've got two, I think there were. No gas that I remember. And that was what we had. It was very basic. So we cooked 108 preparations for this festival. Prabhupada was there. I can't remember. It was Bhaktisiddhanta or Bhaktivinoda, appearance, disappearance. Not sure anymore. I'd have to look it up. So we cooked 108. I mean, how we did it, 108 in those conditions. We did cheat. You know, you make the Simply Wonderfuls. You have one with nothing in, one with currants in, one with cashews in, with one with cashews and currants, you know. It was, I admit, we, you know, that's when you, you know. So we cooked this 108 feast. Now, in India, the pots to lids, they don't have handles, they're flat. The big pots, you know, I'm talking big pots. They don't have handles, they're flat. So we put the prayer. Oh, yeah, Hansaduta came down and said, oh, Prabhupada will want to see this, take it up to see Prabhupada. So we had these big lids with all the 108 preps on, or at least quite a number of them. And when we got to the stairs, the lids were bigger than the stairway. Now, I don't even know how we got them up there, you know. You know, all these full plates with all these 108 preps on. But somehow we got them up two flights of stairs to Srila Prabhupada's room. And it all went in. And then Prabhupada sent the message. It was Sarva Mangal and I struggling up there with these plates of maha. And Prabhupada sent the message, this movement is nothing without its feasts. So remember that. Don't go short on the feasts. Throw the paneer in. Because this movement is nothing without its feasts. I actually went with Srila Prabhupada to Ahmedabad. And there I saw Srila Prabhupada. I'm hurrying up now. I'm looking at the time. There I saw Srila Prabhupada in his preaching mood and how charming he was. So, of course, Ahmedabad. This was before the temple was built. Jashamati Nandan, who later built the temple, was with us. Achyutananda, then Maharaj, was there, and there was a group of us went. We actually took the small deities from Bombay, little Radharasa Bihari, with us, and we were staying in a life member's house. But I saw Prabhupada in action, and Prabhupada was absolutely charming. He was the best preacher ever. So we were in these very rich people's houses, and Prabhupada said, he said, to be a Bengali or a Gujarati is a special birth. And he said, Krishna's father was a Gujarati. And of course, all the Gujarati business, they're all so charmed by this little that Prabhupada said, Krishna's father was a Gujarati, and they're all laughing and smiling and probably getting their checkbooks out, I don't know. But understand that Prabhupada, it wasn't about the money with Prabhupada, it was about the spirit souls being saved. But it was so wonderful to see Srila Prabhupada in action. And then later on, we had a big Pandal program, and we were selling books, and I'd sold the most books, and Achyutananda was saying, oh, we've got to tell Prabhupada, you know. And it was a wonderful time. And someone brought limkas. A limka is an equivalent of a 7-Up. You know a 7-Up, a limpka. If you've been to India, you all know what a limpka is. So we're all at this panel. It's April. Okay, now, April in India, hottest month. We're dying, you know. It's 110 at least degrees in Ahmedabad. And we're all dying, and someone brings these 7-Ups, and they're all sitting next to us, and one's next to Prabhupada. Now, can we drink the 7-Ups? There's one in front of Prabhupada, and there's one in front of all of us. Can we drink the 7-Ups? No. Because Prabhupada hasn't drunk his. We can't go slurping on limpkas if Prabhupada is just sitting there. So I'm fainting from the heat and the tiredness of it all. We've been on Harinam, selling books, everything. And I'm saying, Prabhupada, please drink the 7-Up limpka. And Prabhupada took one little swig. The bottle didn't touch his lips, you know, one little swig. So then we all drank our limpkas. But that's just to explain to you the position of the guru with the disciple. If Srila Prabhupada's not drinking the limpka, we're not drinking the limpka, even though it's 100 and God knows what degrees, and we're all dying in the heat. But that was the etiquette of being with the guru. Oh. So eventually I went to Vrindavan. Our All India GBC sent me to Vrindavan, Gopal Krishna Maharaj, for which I'm very grateful, always grateful to him for. And Prabhupada, I used to clean his house, but I'm going to tell another story first. I'll see how the time goes. So Prabhupada had noted that the deities were wearing garlands at the Mali, the flower garland maker. It's called a Mali in Hindi. And Prabhupada didn't want that. He wanted the ladies to make the garlands for the deities. And it turns out he knew everything about everything, really, and he knew how to keep the flowers fresh. You have to fold them in wet cloth and hang them high and all kinds of tricks on how to keep the flowers fresh. Because don't forget, there was maybe one refrigerator in the whole of Krishna Balaram Man complex at that point. The deities had a fridge. No one else had a fridge. Austere times. No one had a fan. And if they did, the electricity didn't work. So Prabhupada said, I want the ladies to come to my room such and such a time, such and such a day, and I'm going to teach them how to make garlands. So do you think we all went? You can be sure we did. There were people there I didn't even know were in Vrindavan, you know. It's like this whole crowd arrived at Prabhupada's house to learn deity garland making from Srila Prabhupada himself. But Prabhupada was very clever, and he was very busy as well. He'd got people in his room. And he called one of our god sisters she'd been having quite a difficult time because her husband had taken sannyas. So he sent for her. So she came down to the room where we all were, and he said, she will teach you how to make garlands. And it was like I saw how Prabhupada got everything done with one action. He got us all making the garlands, but he also helped my god sister, who was not feeling well, was feeling under the weather, but he got her engaged in making these garlands. So the story is not finished there. So we all made the garlands for Krishna Balaram every morning. And then one day, In India, the garlands, the flowers, often they're small, white, with little stems. If the stems break, it's practically impossible to use the flowers. So there's all these spare flowers floating around on our garland-making place. So I thought it'd be a nice idea to shower flowers on Srila Prabhupada as he passed by from the balcony. So I do it. I'm showering. They weren't used to bring garlands, showering the flowers. I was thinking how the demigods shower flowers down on special events. So I was all happy. But you know what Srila Prabhupada said? Any guesses? I've told you before, don't waste flowers. Prabhupada was very economic. He's very aware of what went round and, you know, how money was spent, how we lived, how we behaved. Oh, boy. I'm going to have to skip some stories, but I'm going to tell, not the last time I saw Srila Prabhupada, because I was there when Srila Prabhupada left his body, but one of the last things. Prabhupada left for London. He came, last darshan in the West, was here, Radha Gokulananda. I'm presuming he went to Soho, but I'm not actually sure now I come to think about it. But Prabhupada came here in November 1977, or maybe it was the end of October, I'd have to check. But before he left, his flight was late at night, British Airways, I believe. And he left Vrindavan about midnight. It was midnight. So, of course, we're all waiting up. We're all going to wave him off. We're all on the street outside Krishna Balaram Temple. And as luck would have it, my good fortune, as the car was driving away, Prabhupada had this old maroon ambassador car. He had three, one in Mayapur, one in Vrindavan, one in Bombay. The Bombay one's still there. It's all shiny and wonderful. Vrindavan one fell to pieces a long time ago. So as luck would have it, this car, after it started, stopped in such a position that I was looking down on Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was looking up at me. And he was lying in the back of the car, lying on some guest house mattresses. And as I looked down, somehow there was light. I don't know how there was light, but there was light. And I could see that Srila Prabhupada was reduced to just like skin on top of the bone. There was no fat. There couldn't see any muscles. It was just a layer of skin on top of the bones. And it was very near to tears type stuff, you know. It was like to see Prabhupada in that condition. But it made me realize, firstly, how determined Srila Prabhupada was to preach in the West, because he was going back to the West. There was a whole discussion, should he go on Padyatra around, go over downhill, should he go to the West to preach? And Prabhupada eventually took this journey to London to see his devotees. The aim was to go on to New York, but as we know, he didn't make it there. But that determination to travel with the body so worn out. I mean, my body's nowhere near that worn out, and I'm already thinking, oh my God, have I really got to do this? But it was to see that determination, but also to see how compassionate Srila Prabhupada was to us, to want to undergo a journey in such a condition where you know, the nerves would have been all hurting for sure, with no muscles and no fat. And I'm not a doctor, but I can imagine the pain. And to see Srila Prabhupada, it's a very humbling experience, because it makes you realize what you have, that you have Srila Prabhupada, or you have him if you want him. As I always say, Srila Prabhupada is as near to us as we want him to be. If we want to push him away, we can push him away. And if we want him right slap bang here next to us, that's where he's going to be. So do bear that in mind as you go through your life, that Srila Prabhupada, we all have free will. You know, I've heard devotees say, oh, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of Krishna. But don't put the blame on Krishna for your decisions. You have that free will to make your decisions. Krishna goes along with it. He's not making your decisions for you. So whatever predicaments we find ourselves in, situations, whether they're good or bad, we've pretty much put ourselves there by our karma and by our poor choices, or hopefully by our good choices. So what I would like to end, I would like you all to make good choices, continue serving Srila Prabhupada, go out on Harinam. They're all talking about Harinam in these books, this Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, and chant and be happy, because that's what Srila Prabhupada, he wanted us to be happy. He didn't want a bunch of miserable people. He wanted us to be chant and be happy. Eat prasadam. He's given us such wonderful things. So I believe the class ends at 8:30, am I right? Used to. So I will end on that note. And please, I want you to add one thing. Please don't take Krishna consciousness cheaply. It's a very serious thing. Having a material body, very serious thing. And it's not cheap to get out of this body. But Srila Prabhupada's given us a key. So let's take that key and use it and join Prabhupada again somewhere in the Sankirtan movement, or maybe we'll go back to Godhead and whatever, but don't waste your human body. Keep serving Krishna. That's what I'd like to say. And, in classes, when you're a teacher, which I was for 30 years in the Gurukul, we have what you call a plenary. And if you want to do this, obviously you might not want to, but you might like to have a look at the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, page 146. Well, in this version, who knows? There's so many versions, I can't keep up. And it explains the qualities of Krishna. I wanted to go into it, but not time. And of course, we know that every living entity has some degree of these qualities. But if you read them and you think about how Prabhupada showed that quality, it's a really nice exercise to remind you of Krishna. You know, if you read Prabhupada's biographies and then you read these qualities and you put the two together, it's a really nice way of meditating on Srila Prabhupada. So that's one thing you could do. That's your homework. I told you I was a teacher. I've given the homework. Of course, you don't have to do it. So thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for entering the Jaladuta boat, traveling 12,000 miles in horrible weather, and bringing Krishna consciousness to the Western world and to all of us. Everyone who's come into contact with Krishna consciousness, whichever way it was in this Western world, it all goes back to Srila Prabhupada. Please have no misunderstanding on that one. It all goes back to Prabhupada for taking that journey. So please be grateful to Srila Prabhupada, because there's no cure for ungratefulness. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. About me? No, this is about Prabhupada. You can't talk about me. I'm boring.
I just want to...
I'm boring. You're not going to tell them the time we had a fight, are you?
No. We'll let that one go. But anyway, I used to see her most mornings up in Prabhupada's room with the kids. It was usually before they went to the school and wherever that was. And she used to be there and tell them all these Krishna stories and get them doing japa and God knows what. And it was just... a thing that is just a reflection of Prabhupada, actually. That his concern for getting everybody involved in Krishna consciousness in such a way, it was like Prabhupada left something with each of the Prabhupada disciples, something very special. And when we have your association here, it is appreciated, because somehow there's a quality in the Prabhupada disciples that we have here, that somehow they're given us Prabhupada in the real terms and with their reflections, because it's in the relationships they had. And so I just wanted to thank Mother Moksha.
Thank you.
For her thing and what I saw each morning with the kids there. And...
I really miss my service, but I've gotten too old now. I mean, I could do something little probably, but and also COVID nearly killed me, so I don't leave my house as much as I used to, let's put it that way. But I really miss that service with the children, and it's such a rewarding service. I actually saw one of my ex-students the other day, and he's 17 now. On Sunday we went to that eco farm up in Leicestershire or Lincolnshire, one's in one, one's in the other. And the mum of this ex-student said he cried when he had to leave your class. And I thought, well, what a validation, you know, like, because you really do get into looking back at your life when you get older. And I just feel, well, you know, thank you, Krishna, for giving me that opportunity to help your Vaikuntha children in whatever small way I could. It was a very rewarding service. And I really miss it. We used to be here all dancing. We were twirling them around. It was so much fun. It's really a shame that the children don't come and see the Krishna so much anymore. Maybe they do. I'm not sure. Even I haven't been coming so much. I'm doing everything online these days. It's terrible. I go to Mangal Arctic in Vrindavan practically every day, and that's at midnight. So you can imagine how I'm all off kelter since COVID. But, yeah. But I think you will all enjoy what service you do, because you have to work to your propensity. You have to find something that you feel comfortable doing in Krishna consciousness. You know, it's no good being a teacher if you hate kids, is it? You've got to find the thing that suits you and stick with it and keep with it. There's always be obstacles because we're in the material world. And don't forget, actually I heard a lecture once Prabhupada gave, and he said, as you advance in Krishna consciousness, Maya steps up her attacks, and these attacks become more difficult to overcome. So there will be tests. There's always tests. I've just gone through about 4 years of tests, but you just have to stick with it. We don't really have a choice if we want to get out of the material world. You just have to stick with Krishna consciousness. Stick by those lotus feet. One of my godbrothers wrote this really nice Vyasa Puja offering. What was it? Something like, neat, neat, sweet, sweet, can't be beat, them two lotus feet. I think it kind of sums it up. We have to stick with Srila Prabhupada. And we'll be fine. We'll manage it all. We'll get there, back to Godhead, and be with Prabhupada. So stick with it. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada again. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.